Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. Ron Carson's Coliseum is closed today, and Ron himself is unavailable, so we'll be starting with Brian Walker of Brian's Drive-In Theater and wrapping up with Setna Comwest of Cinematic Tales of Old Kemet. Greetings and welcome, Brian. How are you today?
I'm well tonight, Hercules. How are you this evening?
I'm doing awesome. Very busy day. It zoomed by. And now we're here.
as they do. I want to apologize up front. I've got a slight lisp that will hopefully go away in a couple of days.
Okay.
I sound a little bit like Sylvester the Cat. I do. I'm not kidding. I keep, and there's nothing I can do about it.
you don't sound so like Sylvester to me. I hear you in your normal voice.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And for tonight's Sword and Sandal Cinema episode, I wanted to talk about Samson Burke and the Three Stooges Meet Hercules.
Very awesome.
Great. Now, we've touched on the movie before, and actually I've got it running right now. There are several things about this film as a peplum, and it is a peplum, but it's not. One of the things that kind of struck me is that this is the only peplum that I can think of that was made in sort of the golden era, between 1958 and 1965, that's not shot in color. Now, you might remember one that's black and white, but this is the only one that I can think of. And when you watch The Three Stooges Meet Hercules, if you watch the opening credits, they even point out to, by stating filmed in glorious black and white. It's on one of the title cards at the very beginning. And it is, odd in that it is black and white. I've seen a few, and this was a long time ago, a few black and white copies of peplums that actually were shot in color. But I can't think of any other ones. Can you? Can you think of any that weren't in color?
I never thought of it before, but no, I can't think of any offhand.
Well, and for me, that's one of the hallmarks of the peplums is the scenery. They're shot in very lush, lavish color, and a lot of it's location, outdoor shooting, and you get nice vistas, beautiful scenery and such. And I think the color film stock is really critical, in that respect, in peplums. And well, this one is obviously a Three Stooges movie and not technically a peplum, although it's got its moments. it is shot as a traditional Three Stooges movie. Were you ever a Stooges fan at all?
Yeah, I used to watch it on television growing up. I'm 65 now, and when I was growing up, it was on the TV, and also at church and other functions, they used to show the Three Stooges movies. Of course, they would focus on that one because it was Greek and Roman. I was a fan. I wasn't a great fan, but I was aware of them and I thought they were funny.
Well, even though you're 65 now and more sophisticated, you can still find them funny. to tell you the truth, the Three Stooges have lived on into the 21st century, unlike a lot of other comedy teams, from the 1930s and 1940s that really haven't lived on into the 21st century. For example, on Saturday night for 2 hours leading up to the primetime slot for Svengoolie at 8, MeTV runs two solid hours of Three Stooges shorts.
Oh, wow.
And it's every week. And it's the lead into Svengoolie, which is one of MeTV's, it probably is MeTV's most popular show because it's in the prime slot. It's 8 o'clock on Saturday night. And Sin Gulli, I think, usually does pull in like 1.4 million views, a view or something like that. I mean, it does really well for these days. You know, 60 years ago when the Three Stooges were making films like this, that would have been, you know, a market share like that would have killed, you know, a television show in prime time. But now those are good ratings because there's so many different options for us, you know, to watch now. We don't have just the three networks and then whatever public broadcasting was available in your area at the time. And the three, like I said, the Three Stooges, and it's obviously it's not very sophisticated humor. And I do think that childhood is sort of is the ultimate gateway to loving the Three Stooges. And I'm a fan. I like the Three Stooges a lot. But not that some of it isn't smart, but you don't really consider their comedy as cerebral.
No,
you know, it's slapstick. It's things that are easily even as a 4 or 5 year old, you can watch a Three Stooges short and be entertained by it and get most of the humor. I'm not saying that it's stupid or anything.
They did something very interesting in that movie. They made Hercules the real Hercules as opposed to the fake Hercules that their companion was initially. He was a villain, and he was serving the evil king. And because their companion, whose name I forget, was accomplishing great deeds and building a reputation as Hercules to live up to what our expectations are, it eventually gave the real villainous Hercules a change of heart, and he became a hero. So I thought that was pretty neat when I was a kid, and I still think it's a pretty neat message.
Well, and they couldn't, you know, obviously, since the genre was so popular when The Three Stooges Meet Hercules was shooting, it shot in summer of 1961. It just had a 2-week shooting schedule. And, you know, The Three Stooges, they weren't compensated the way, you know, stars are now, obviously. They weren't, you know, poor or anything, but they also weren't wealthy. And their films were shot to a price. I mean, they worked for Columbia Studios for years. They worked throughout the Harry Cohn years at Columbia. He loved the Three Stooges, and even when other studios had discontinued their shorts units in the early 1950s, he loved the Stooges so much that he decreed that Three Stooges shorts were going to be made until he died.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, and he died in 1958. And that kind of threw, you know, the comedy team into a tailspin. But Moe's daughter, Joan, had married a producer by the name of Norman Maurer. And Norman Maurer also worked for Columbia. He'd produced some films. He'd written quite a bit of things, too. And he sort of took over and started producing and writing their feature-length films, which they really hadn't done many of prior to Harry Cohn passing away in the late 1950s. And their feature-length films were successful. This was among the most successful. Three Stooges Meet Hercules was among their most successful features from the early 1960s. And it kind of spurred them on. Norman Maurer was able to get enough capital together to do several more films. And you're right, you couldn't, with the popularity of Peplum, you couldn't well have your Hercules character being a bad guy, because that's the antithesis of, you know, the protagonist in the Peplum films. Hercules has to be the protagonist, correct?
Correct.
And the druggist or their geeky friend is played by Quinn K. Redeker, and he is the false Hercules or the fake Hercules. Anyway. He's the one with the horn-rimmed glasses, and he's kind of a doofus in it. But he ends up getting the girl, who in this case is portrayed by Vicki Trickett. One other interesting thing to point out in this film, I pointed out that it was, you know, perhaps the only peplum-adjacent film shot in black and white. You point out that Hercules is actually the antagonist for a while. But there's a couple of other unique things about the film. One, this is kind of a sad footnote, actually. But Samson Burke, who portrays Hercules in this, is the only primary cast member who's left. Everybody else has passed on. There are some, you know, supporting players who, I think I found one who was still alive, but everybody else from the film has passed on. And, you know, Samson Burke will be 95 years old, so that's, you know, quite a feat in and of itself. And that will occur, what, just about 5 or 6 weeks from now, actually. I think April 8th. He will be 95 years old.
Wow. I think he's
That's amazing.
I tried to reach. I tried to reach several people that were still alive, and I lost the trail I was following. There was a website that was still up, but it hadn't been updated in years, and the webmaster didn't respond to any of my queries. I had to track down some other leads too, and they all led cold. So I would love to have him on the show to talk about his adventures in the peplum genre.
The website you mentioned is still up, but indeed it had the latest mention of a date I could find was 2009. Ooh. So we were looking at this. Yeah, it's 15 years, but it's still up. And he has a really neat page on his website, and that's the official Samson Burke website, which you can get to from the Samson Burke page on the Brian's Drive-In Theater site, so I won't send you looking for it. And when you look at it, I mean, everything's still there, and the links are all active and such. And he's got an interesting a bit about being in the Three Stooges and Hercules, including some pictures of when he went to the Stooges Museum a number of years ago. But the last thing that I could find from this was, like I said, about 2009. So, I mean, it's great that somebody's keeping it up, because I'm here to tell you, you can't leave an old website up without links being broken and such. And this one's all together, you know. So, and somebody's paying to keep it up. We just don't know who. It says, for information, please contact bookings@samsonburke.com, but obviously nobody's...
I've done that too.
I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm guessing nobody's ever, responded there. And, that's one thing, and we've talked about this in the past. A lot of websites that you used to go to for information back in the late 90s, if they are still around, haven't been touched in years, and they sort of look like derelict vehicles, upon blocks, missing parts, and there are broken links everywhere, and image files that no longer load, things of that nature. But his website is, even though it hasn't been touched, is still up.
I'm going to be starting something on Thursday. And Thursday, because it's a leap year this year, I wasn't even aware of it.
It is.
And so I thought that was an auspicious day to start something new. I'm restarting Neos Olympus, which in Greek means New Olympus. And that's a name I've used for an umbrella of activities that I've done throughout the years, some of which are still ongoing, some of which haven't been for a while, and I'll be bringing back. So after we launch on Thursday, I'm going to be officially declaring Brian's Drive-In Theater a shrine.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
So we'll put together a special show, and I'll make that proclamation. But you'll be an official internet shrine, and we're going to interview you about your life and your accomplishments and your lifelong passion for peplum. And we'll put something up like once a month that you're an official shrine in the groups that are under the Sword and Sandal Cinema banner, and the pages, of course.
Well, that's quite an honor. Thank you very much, Hercules. I appreciate that.
Well, you're awesome, and you've done an awesome thing for those of us who love Sword and Sandal Cinema.
And you say what you will about my website, but I keep it updated.
Yes, you do, and it's wonderful. It's retro, and so is new retro.
You know, that said, I've kind of gotten it back into shape. I had to disassociate myself with the Amazon affiliate program. I'm not hating on Amazon or anything. It's just the way that they've got their affiliate program structured doesn't really fit with the website anymore. It took me like 3 weeks to go through the website. And this is, you know, every day. You know, going through page after page and pulling all that stuff out. I've got some ideas for you giving the website. You don't want it to let it get stale. You know, I had the same, you know, overall look for like 10, 12 years. And I don't want to let it, you know, linger, you know, like that, because it looks old, and you do need to, you know, constantly tweak and you make sure everything is up to World Wide Web Consortium standards and such. But you want to make sure it's accessible to everyone, you know, who comes in. And people may need readers. You never know. But I would like to further refine the look and overall navigation as well. I try to make it as easily navigable as possible. But what I think makes sense in terms of navigation might not match up with the end user. So as I continue to refine this, I will try to hit upon the best combination of graphics, information, and the ability to navigate among the graphics and the information.
And I spoke recently with Nicholas Dyack and Michelle Brittany. And I told them I've been trying to nudge you into translating your site or parts of your site into coffee table books without the pictures. And they agreed that your site would make awesome coffee table books. And they plugged you several times. They're fans of yours now, and they use your resource quite often.
Well, that's great. You've done a lot for my ego today, please. Thank you very much. I appreciate the boost. I guess we could all use one from time to time, but thank you for that, for saying that. And thank you for all the kind things that you always say about the website.
My pleasure.
Even if I keep lisping when I say, when I have words with S's in them. As I said, I think this will only be a couple days. Sometimes. I'm just having an interesting dental issue right now.
I had one of those not too long ago, and I could have avoided it, but I wasn't even aware of it. I was just oblivious until after the show when I was listening to the show to make sure that it translated okay when I posted it. It's like, I could have avoided these dental issues.
Hmm. Well, anyway, you know, getting back to the Three Stooges Meet Hercules, it's shot well. Now, the copy that I have is in this set with five other Three Stooges movies. It's got, I believe, four features and two shorts in the set. And, you know, when I first put it in a couple of days ago, not that it looks bad, but, and maybe it's just this copy, but, I really thought it would look better, you know, because, I mean, this movie is... it still airs on TV from time to time. I think it's been on Svengoolie now that I think about it. Some of the other Three Stooges movies have. I'm just surprised that my copy doesn't look better than this. But it's not Blu-ray or anything. You know, it's just standard definition DVD, at least the copy that I have.
Mine isn't DVD still. I have, I believe, two copies of it. One of them better than the other.
Ah, okay. I guess this is probably just the one, probably just the unrestored version. I guess there's no Criterion Collection version of this. Like I said, you know, I've always been a fan of Three Stooges, and their comedy still speaks to a generation of television viewers, which I think is amazing. Some of the other comedy teams that I liked from their era, like, Laurel and Hardy, I liked a lot. I loved W.C. Fields. And they haven't really translated into the 21st century much. I mean, there's still people who love them as comedians, but they're not as successful as, say, like Abbott and Costello, who still have, you know, a really good following. Their movies are on AMC a lot, Turner Classic Movies, Svengoolie, and the Three Stooges. They've sort of withstood the test of time too.
Yeah, it's great that unfortunately you have to buy the movies all over again when they switch favorite formats. I seen 4K. I don't know if that's a different thing than Blu-ray or DVD, if it's just clear, or do you need another machine to play HD movies now? I haven't even gotten there. I'm still transferring solely over to Blu-ray. But it's in a way annoying and in a way very comforting to see these movies be re-released.
It is, but, you know, for some movies, I'm not sure we're ever going to see any kind of restored versions until artificial intelligence is able to do the restoration, which, hey, that could be coming.
Yes.
We will see. And for me, I am a big Three Stooges fan. And like I said, I know it's not cerebral comedy, but it's fun to watch the boys, especially in their original iteration with Moe, Larry, and Curly. When Howard was still well enough to be part of the comedy team, he had a stroke in the late 1940s and died in the early 1950s at a very young age. I think he was maybe 45, 46 when he passed away.
Oh, wow.
The team really lost something when he passed away. They recruited their other brother, Shemp, who had been he'd been an actor in his own right, but then Shemp died. So they got Joe Besser, and he didn't really work out. He didn't have the same, I don't know, it just wasn't the same rapport. And then for this movie, they had Joe DiRita in the Curly role. You know, I don't know how to put that. How do you stereotype Curly? Well, I don't want to say buffoon because I don't want to refer to him as a buffoon because they're all buffoons, you know. So, but anyway, he fulfills the Curly role in that. Moe's sort of the hothead head honcho, and Larry is sort of the whipping boy, and Curly's the one with the charisma. You know, he's the funny one. Unfortunately, what I did find out something really interesting when I was doing my research for this. This is very tangential to the movie, I will admit, but Larry Fine had a really bad stroke in early 1970. Moe's son-in-law, Norman Lauer, was proposing a television show and was shooting a sort of pilot for the television show. Ended up calling it Kook's Tour. It was going to be about the Three Stooges in retirement traveling across the U.S. It was sort of like a travelogue TV show.
Uh-huh.
So that was the proposal. Well, Larry had a stroke before they were really finished filming it. So they had to load it up with some stock footage here and there in order to stretch it out to about an hour. And what Norman Maurer wanted to do was, since Larry Fine could no longer work after his stroke, he was incapacitated. So Norman Lauer wanted to at least recoup some of the losses of shooting this. And he couldn't find, even with padded out to about an hour, he couldn't find anybody who was willing to distribute it. So eventually, in the mid-1970s, it became one of the first films released to home video, interestingly. It was, but not on VHS or Beta. It was actually released on Super 8 millimeter and 16 millimeter to the home video market. That was its release. And that kind of blew my mind because in the 80s, a lot of films were in 90s, a lot of films were released directly, to home video or home theater.
Right.
But this was, among the very first ones, and it predated, Beta and VHS since it was released through Niles home video. And back then in 1975, as a former customer of Niles, and that's me, I do remember that they had complete Super 8 millimeter sound copies of Kook's Tour, which actually is in the public domain. You can watch it on YouTube, archive.org, because the copyright was never renewed on it. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure it ever had a copyright. It might have just – Niles did do a lot of films that were in the public domain, so that could be the tie-in there. But I'm pretty sure Kook's Tour is public domain. And do with that what you will.
Unfortunately, we run out of time, and there's never enough time, unfortunately. I want to thank you so very much, Brian. How can people find you, the Drive-In Theater, and hopefully find out more about that future coffee table book or three?
All right. Stop by the Drive-In at briansdriveintheater.com. You can point your browser there, or if you don't want to spell Brian's Drive-In Theater, you can always go into the search engine of your choice, type in Brian's Drive-In Theater, and that will lead you directly to the site. If you want to interact with me on social media, your social media platform is going to be Facebook, and you can search for Brian J. Walker or Brian's Drive-In Theater, and you should arrive at the Brian's Drive-In Theater page on Facebook.
Thank you so very much. Have a wonderful evening, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Hercules. Take care and be well.
You too, and may your dental dilemma resolve itself.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. And now we approach the middle of our program, and we are going to be switching gears to ancient Egypt with Sedna Kamwest of Cinematic Tales of Old Kemet. And today we're going to be learning about Nefertiti, Queen of Egypt. Greetings and welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. It's 73 degrees here, and I'm having a ball.
Very good.
I can't wait to talk about this film. By the way, it's never been on television. It's even one of those 4 o'clock in the morning kind of things. It's never been there. You can get the full movie on YouTube. It's called Nefertiti, Queen of Egypt, or Queen of the Nile. And it's a very interesting movie. You have three reasonably big stars. You have Vincent Price as the evil high priest. You have Jean Crane, who plays his daughter, and you have her love interest, Edward Cardam, who's wearing the same costumes he wore 10 years earlier in the movie The Egyptian.
Oh, wow. How's that for costumes?
It's a very same wig, same robes, everything. And it's in Pinewood Studios, which I love, of course, because it's all my favorite horror films. That's Hammer Films, so I love them, and that's kind of cool. And Vincent Price was right at home. I will say whoever did the makeup should have been shot. Vincent Price has eyebrows above his eyebrows. It's kind of interesting. And he's a gem. He really does the best thing. There's a fellow who plays Akhenaten, and they call him Amenophis, and he's kind of dumb, so I would say he's Imadufis. And it's a very interesting thing. I'll put it in the Sophia Petrillo kind of thing as the Golden Girls. She would say, picture it, Egypt, 1350 BC, Thebes, And what happens is you have a girl named Tanis. And Tanis, anyone? And she's in love with a sculptor who is played by Edward Purdom. And they have a clandestine meeting in the woods, which looks like Florida, because there's all kinds of sago palms and all kinds of things. And it's actually filmed in Sicily, which is why Sophia Petrillo was perfect, right? She's from Sicily. Anyway, so this beautiful girl, this Jean Crane, comes out in this long diaphanous gown with eyebrows that go all the way to her, the line goes all the way to her temples, which is very much the style back in the 50s. This film, like The Three Stooges and Hercules, was filmed and released in 1961 on the heels of Elizabeth Taylor's Cleopatra, which, by the way, today is her birthday. So happy birthday, Elizabeth Taylor.
Happy
and
birthday.
Also my other hero, Georgette Klinger. This is her birthday, too. This is a very good day for Pisces, kind of a cool thing.
Yes.
So getting back to Egypt. So the lovers, there's a thing that happens because all of a sudden an army of Egyptian soldiers comes, and she lets out, of course, a clandestine scream, and he runs away, and she's dragged off into a temple. Well, what you don't know is that she's promised, even though she's going to be this Edward Purdom's lover, she's going to be a priestess of the temple. A priestess of what? We don't know. It's a temple in Thebes, which is Amun-Ra at the time, in 1350 BC. That is the 18th dynasty. And Amenhotep III was the pharaoh who just dies. And Amenophis, who is really the pharaoh Akhenaten, I don't know why they can't say Akhenaten, is going to take over the throne. Well, they drag Jean, poor Jean, in front of Vincent, and he says to her, you know, we should kill you because of what you did with this guy, because you're now going to be the pharaoh's wife. And she's like, what? So, yeah, she can't be his lover, and she's going to be pharaoh's wife. So there's a whole ceremony that's really kind of beautiful, but they use a claymore, which is a Scottish sword, and it looks almost like the one they use in the Thundercats. It's ridiculous. And, you know, you're looking around and all kinds of things going on. There's a guy smoking in the background, if you really look carefully, which is kind of fun, but that's the 1960s. And it's a very low-budget film. The costumes are very well done. In the credits, it talks about a Columbia costume company that made the costumes. So it's not – they're right out of a, you know, right out of a Hollywood costumer. They're not specially made for this film. And I find that interesting. So what happens is that Vincent Price tells Jean Crane, I'm your father. You know, and she's like, what? And all of a sudden she finds out she's the daughter of the high priest. And the pharaoh Amenhotep III dies. What we don't know is that the sculptor is best friends with Amenophis. So he runs over and he says, listen, Amen, I got this girl I want to get to know better, but she's a daughter of, she's involved with the temples and I can't touch her. And he says, don't worry about it. I'll write a decree and blah, 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 blah. So they meet, except Vincent has other plans for her. So once again, the guards come out and they drag her off and they put him in chains, even though there's a decree from Akhenaten that, you know, it's okay for them to get together. And he goes to this other ceremony and they put that sword on her neck and she has a blood dot and they bring that onto the altar of Amenhotep. And now she's the bride, the priestess of, and she's also going to be the bride of the pharaoh. And she's like, what? I'm in love with the sculptor. And he's like, that's too bad. Never mind about him. He's dead. We killed him off. So she's upset. And she realized she's consigned to her fate. And she's going to become, and he changed her name from Tanis to Nefertiti. Neferu Aten Nefertiti means a beautiful woman has come. And frankly, Jean Crane is gorgeous in this movie. Really, really beautiful. Does she look like the bust of Nefertiti? Yeah, no. but she's beautiful. And it goes on. So she meets Amenophis. He falls head over heels in love with her because she's gorgeous. And they get married. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of weeks later, and there's, of course, there's always another girl involved because she's, you know, the long-suffering slob. There's always one of those in these movies. And she falls in love with the sculptor, with Edward Curtin. And she's a belly dancer, of course, because there was always belly dancers in this movie. And
in many of those movies, belly dancers.
Always a belly dancer. You know, whether or not that was going to happen or not, it was there.
It was there.
By the way, it just had to happen. And the film is filmed in Technicolor, so there are a lot of bright, splashy colors. And it's very good that way, and it is very much in the period. And it is, I'll call it a spaghetti Egyptian Western. You know, half of the cast is Italian, and there are some Arabic peoples, too. And there's only three really English-speaking stars. And there's a guy, a little-known English actor, who plays the priest of the Aten. And according to this, the priest comes, and they're all going to be captured and murdered and everything because they're against the traditional Egyptian religion, because Akhenaten later becomes the arbiter of this of Aten. And that actually happened, but it didn't happen the way they do it in the film. This older guy comes from the Western desert, and he has the knowledge of the all-seeing Aten. And the thing he's got around his neck kind of looks like an octopus.
Okay.
It doesn't look like the Aten. And his outfit is a Celtic warrior's outfit, which is kind of interesting. And he's got kind of got that kind of a page boy haircut going on, too. But not existing. Yeah, it's sort of more Prince Valiant, you know, and it's, you know, 200 and 300 years later, in England. Anyway, so Nefertiti decides she is going to marry Akhenaten, and she does. And they decide they want a bust of her, a statue. So who do they call on? Her best friend, and his best friend and her former lover. And his girlfriend's having heart failure because she sees how beautiful Jean Crane is, and she's like, oh, my God, wow. So he's sitting there with her, and they're carving the statue face and things, and it looks like the bust. Except it really looks like Jean Crane. It doesn't look like a real thing. And so in the meantime, Vincent Price is furious because this other priest has taken over the duties of the high priest. And he and the other priests decide they're going to get the pharaohs, the people of Egypt, back their old religion. What's funny is the high priest in reality, actually did this. So it's kind of half-truth. They get the army out. In the meantime, Nefertiti tells the sculptor, listen, can you go run to the Western Desert and get another army? We're in big trouble here. And the girl, of course, is going to go with him because she's a Western Desert kind of person. And she goes on a horse and she helps rescue them, and they all come back out. And, of course, you know what happens. They can't have two female love interests. So, of course, she gets an arrow in the boob. And she falls down the floor. And she's saved. You know, she's the long-suffering heroine from the beginning to the end. Nefertiti comes out of the temple after Akhenaten kills himself. He doesn't see that he can go any further, and he says, well, he'll go to the Aten, so he stabs himself. Nefertiti comes into the throne room and sees him and screams, and she comes out in this amazing Isis costume. And she says, you know, I am the queen of Egypt. You're going to do what I want from now on. Now, what's funny is there's no King Tut. There's no children. It's just, you know, the way the story is, it's just Akhenaten and Nefertiti and this artist and this evil priest. So it's hysterically inaccurate. It's really bad that way. But it's a beautiful romp. I very much enjoyed it. I love the costumes. I thought the set was really kind of cool. The funny part is this guy worships the Aten, and all of a sudden you see all these other gods and goddesses all over the place. And they shouldn't have been there because he's not worshiping them anymore. So it's kind of silly that way. You know, nobody says anything. And people that have been, you know, got an arrow through their throat in one other scene, they're back now. and they're getting shot on the course of the other scene, the next scene. I guess they had a limited amount of stunt people. So they, you know, they die several times. And that's kind of fun. But so at the end of the thing, Akhenaten dies. Edward Cardone does not get Nefertiti. She decides she's got to rule Egypt by herself now. So she's kind of gotten things. He loses the other girl because she gets an arrow in her chest. And he goes off, and she goes off to rule Egypt, which never happened, of course. And Vincent Price gets killed, of course, because he's the evil high priest. Excuse me one second. Coffee
sure.
break. You know me. I've got an IV full of iced coffee next to me.
I know. I'm up to my seventh or eighth cup today, too.
I found this coffee in Publix, and also I got it in Stop and Shop in New Jersey, called Stoah, and it's a big bottle of coffee, and it's inexpensive. And instead of running the Dunkin', I have these in the fridge, and it saves me a fortune, and it's delicious. So why not? And I have all my, you know, like I make my breakfast anyway at home. I'm always my breakfast is generally oatmeal with raisins and cranberries and a lot of vitamins. So
yeah, that sounds like it has a lot of vitamins. I usually have protein shakes.
Okay, well, you know, I feel like at my age, I want to make sure cholesterol is no longer a problem. Oatmeal will help remove that, and also. Cranberries are amazing for your blood pressure.
Yeah.
And also for, you know, working to make sure also to unclog the arteries and what have you and help with all your circulation. The other one I always have in my thing besides strawberries and peaches this week are raisins. And I use blueberries usually too. Blueberries are good for your memory. And, you know, at our age, that's an important thing because sometimes I don't remember where I am. And it's really going to go well. I want to recommend this story, this film to people. It is something you can see, as I say, in entirety on YouTube. I was surprised. They wanted to charge me $3.99 on one of the streaming services. I think it was Netflix, I think. They wanted to charge me $3.99 for it to rent it. So I said, what the heck is going on here? And I know I'd seen the film before somewhere, late at night or something. But I did find it on YouTube. So you can just go to Nefertiti, Queen of Egypt, Queen of the Nile, and you'll see Jean Crane, and I think Edward Cardone, and I think maybe Vincent. Vincent Price was the big star in this film. The other two people, I would call Edward Cardone a B actor in B movies. Vincent Price, of course, was a big star, but he also did, you know, Hammer films were not, you know, Gone with the Wind. They weren't major, they were from Pinewood Studios. They were considered B horror films, which, of course, also had Peter Lorre and Boris and Bela Lugosi sometimes. Peter Cushing, who I really love, and Christopher Lee were all in those things. So, and, you know, that was part of the fun of this movie, because you got to see some of the Pinewood players, stock players.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very good, you know, period, I think, sword and sandals period film. There's a lot of, being in Egypt, there's a lot of sandals and a lot of swords. And a lot of people wrapped in ancient Egyptian kind of themed costumes. I mean, it's kind of an interesting film. You can tell that the palace in the beginning and in the end as well is probably cardboard. It looks like a cardboard model, and it's kind of fun. And then they have stairs they run up and down when they're killing each other, and that's kind of fun too. So I enjoyed the film, and I think if you go into it lightheartedly and don't think of it as historically accurate because it's really not. Just go in for fun, because you'll see it. It's a silly thing, and that's what I liked about it. It's just a silly movie. It's almost as bad as Land of the Pharaohs with Joan Collins years ago. It's got that kind of, oh my God, this isn't even ridiculously un-Egyptian. But it works that way. And Edward Curnow's original Egyptian movie, The Egyptian, which is kind of cool because you've got great stars in there. Gene Simmons, Peter Ustinov, Michael Wilding, the ever-popular, totally beautiful Bella Darby. I think it was the only film she ever made. But it's a really, that's an interesting film, too. But you get to see Edward Curnow in this film. And this, it's just funny because he looks exactly the same. It's the same wig. It's the same costumes. And you're like, wait a minute here.
Yeah, that is, and that sounds like something done deliberately.
I think it was. He plays more or less the Sinaway character that he played, you know, the self-righteous, but he's a romantic lover in this. He gets, like in The Egyptian, he gets drunk. He spends the night with the other girl. They wake up, it looks like kind of in a barn kind of thing. It's in this sculptor's studio. They're kind of laying on the floor, and there's blankets over them and such, and they're fully dressed. But it's obvious, and there's wine cups, and there's broken, you know, wine bottles. They must have clearly had a good time that night. And it's because of the fact that he was rejected by Tanis / Nefertiti. And he, you know, he realizes that he thinks of her as kind of a no-goodnik by the end, the middle of the film, because she has married Akhenaten. She knows he's alive, but she does very little to try to get back with him. And then when she's being sculptured, she says to him, you know, I always loved you. I still love you. And he said, you know, well, you know, what are we going to do about this? And she says, listen, I won't do anything because my ambition, my, I guess, reason to be now is to rule, is to be a good Egyptian ruler. And I'm here for the kingdom. And he's like, okay, that's all right, that's fine. So he's got the other girl at that point, and she's, you know, she hates the other girl. She can see that the girl is in love with Edward Curnow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good film that way because it is a love story, kind of a hate story, some accuracy. There, I mean, the high priest and the priest class in Egypt did go after Akhenaten. It is probable that they did kill him. If you've ever seen his sarcophagus, the face is smashed off of it. By the way, Nefertiti, they found, they think, one of the mummies, and she's all beat up. Although she was a beautiful woman, she was ruthless. The true Nefertiti had King Tut's mother, who was her own sister, killed because she produced the male heir. Nefertiti gave Akhenaten 6 daughters, no sons. So she, like a lot of people in harems, got rid of the woman who was the real mother, and she, they say, raised Tutankhamun herself as her own son. And there's another boy. He's either Akhenaten's brother or another son, and his name is Menkaure, and they don't know what happened to him either. He kind of mysteriously vanishes, and he doesn't have a tomb. But they found Akhenaten, and they found what they think now, Zahi Hawass, is fairly convinced this screaming mummy is Nefertiti. So she was probably murdered very horribly, they're thinking, with an axe. They were the most hated king and queen of all of the Egyptian dynasties because they destroyed or tried to destroy the Neteru, which is the Egyptian pantheon. The people of Egypt for 15 years put up with this, and they were taxed beyond mortal comprehension. The temples did have no roofs on them. They were, you know, completely out in the sunlight. So they also think Akhenaten had the sun affect him a bit, too. You know, some mental sun poisoning, as it were, sunstroke. And, you know, he moved they didn't do this in the film either. In the fifth reign of year of Akhenaten's reign, he moved the capital from Thebes, which is Luxor and Karnak now, to in the middle of the kingdom, in the north, kind of more north, which is called Akhenaten. which is the horizon of Aten, and it was in the middle of the desert. There's a hill where there's a carving of the Aten and Nefertiti and Akhenaten, and it says this is where we will build our palace and build our new capital. And that was never, you know, that didn't happen. I guess they only had a limited amount of time, and they really didn't care about the actual story. They had their own storyline. And that's okay. That's Hollywood, right?
That is Hollywood, and that's how mythologies functioned pretty much since the dawn of time. The old tales, the old history got immortalized, and subsequent generations of storytellers embellished it and re-embellished it until the truth is still buried in there. But it takes a lot of time and a lot of people with specialized skills to try to unravel what the actual truth was.
Well, the funny thing is, the actual Nefertiti was probably a Persian princess. She came to the Egyptian throne because she was going to be a present for Amenhotep III, Akhenaten's father, along with her sister, whose name was Megemini. And they were from the Persian king, or the, I guess maybe at that time, Babylonian, the same kingdoms, palace. And they were done as, you know, often women were traded as gifts, concubines, to seal pacts and things, of alliances. And that's how Nefertiti actually ended up getting into Egypt. It was at one time thought she was the daughter of Ai, the high priest, and the niece of King Tut, of Akhenaten's mother, who was Lady Queen Tay. It's been since found out that she's not even an Egyptian. She was a Persian. If you look at her features, if you look at her bone structure and, well, what they see of the coloring, she doesn't look Egyptian. She looks Middle Eastern. She looks Persian, Iraqi, Iranian. She has that bone structure and that coloring. And she is remarkably beautiful. People always said for many, many centuries that she was the most beautiful woman ever. And Nefertiti means a beautiful woman has come. And they didn't find her till, I think, 1927, 1928. They unearthed the bust. You know also that there is a rumor that she's not really an Egyptian statue, that somebody made that later on, and that was just put in there to unearth it. Just as Schliemann's Helen of Troy's treasures, they found he purchased from an art gallery dealer about 15 to 16 days before he discovered them in Italy.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Well, you know me in ancient history. I'm besides Egyptology, archaeology in general is my passion. And so is film. And that's why we get along with this. And that's why I can talk about these things, because I know the real stories. And I know, what Hollywood and Italy and Bollywood and such will say about things. And I love to uncover those kind of mysteries and to set things right. And also to just have a good time with the films.
Yes, you do. And that's why you're a preferred host here on Sword and Sandal Cinema. I think you were listening when I was talking to Brian. I'm starting Neos Olympus, which means the new Olympus. And I will be starting some new initiatives, including some panels. The first one, which will be on Thursday, although we've had several practice ones in the past. And also I'm establishing temples on the platforms. So I would be honored if you would have a Pernatero temple in Neos Olympus.
I would be most honored to do that, of course. You know that when it comes to this, we are a very strong alliance. And of course I would do this, because it would be something that would give me great pleasure. And also, anything I can do to bring knowledge to people, I'm going to do. And, I just hate working with you, of course.
Well, I know that's true of you, and I'm glad that we're adventuring together on these things. Now, again, we're running out of time, and you're doing very many things. So can you walk, can you give people a guided tour of all your activities at present?
Oh, my God. So I do have a following here with my Pernis Heru. That is my my Egyptian temple. I am teaching classes, which I will then work with Hercules, of course. You can reach me, which is really easy, at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can get me either on Facebook at Michael K. Waterman, or on my Phone a Wizard, which is my business, by the way. And that's on Facebook also. You can get me on TikTok at Michael K. Waterman. And you can also get, or it's also ComWes on TikTok, which I thought was kind of cool. And you can get me as MK Waterman on Instagram. I'm all over the place. You can get me on my phone number, which is 516-650-3691. Or you can reach me via, if you want to mail me or send me a letter. You can get me at Michael K. Waterman, 1699 Chatham, C-H-A-T-H-A-M, Parkway, apartment, or I should say just number 1523A, Savannah, Georgia, 31405. And I've got to say, I love my new home. And as I told you in a message a couple of days ago, I have discovered an Olympus about 2 miles from me.
You gave me
and
some links as well.
It's a beautiful complex, and, you know, I don't know if they have a mountain up there, but maybe sometime in the future, they might have a Hercules, which would be really kind of cool.
That would be awesome, and I look forward to following the progress of this new Olympus that's bringing Georgia. They have a Parthenon in Tennessee, so why not an Olympus in Georgia?
And, of course, Atlantis is in Florida.
So mythology is taking over even beyond our meager activities.
And if you want to go to the Luxor, all you're going to do is hit Las Vegas. I stayed there. It's beautiful. Oh, it's a beautiful place.
So if you care to share some of the dreams you have for the future, I know you want to grow your temple and its presence. You're going to be teaching people Egyptian and other esoterica.
I'm also a hereditary witch, shall we say. I will teach magic 101, 102. I have different levels of education. I have a reading list for those that are listening that want to find out what it's all about. I have a very large reading list, and I have courses outlined. My services are also, and my products, because I sculpt and I do make different kits and things, are all available for you either on my website, or you can also find them. You can find what I'm doing on phoneawizard.com, which is going to be a new website that's coming up, or phoneawizard on Facebook. You can leave a message and I will contact you.
Fantastic, ComWes, and thank you so much for being a last-minute host on tonight's show. Awesome review, and I'm definitely more interested in the movie and watching it than I was initially. It sounds like a wonderful Peplum film, and I will talk to you on Thursday.
I'll be here. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Be well.